Just turn it, that's all.
Just turn it on.
Can you hear me all right?
Yeah.
We're going to try to do this without a mic. I speak pretty loudly anyway, and we've got some stuff to cover here. But if I'm moving around a little bit and trying to get to this board and get some interaction with you guys, it won't pick up on this tape anyway, so what the heck. And let's just, if we can do it without the mic, that'd be better. We had a little feedback problem earlier anyway, and it drives some of you guys crazy. And I'm enough to drive you crazy anyway without all that nonsense. So I'm gonna try to keep you about an hour, and hopefully you guys... Trust me, if you need to get up and go smoke or go to the bathroom or something, that's okay with me too. I'm used to people getting up and walking out when I'm talking, so it's no big deal. I'm a sensitive alcoholic, and you will be on my next 4-step. Understand that, but I'm cool. My name's Chris Raymer, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm like Marianne just said this morning. I'm a real alcoholic. I'm the real McCoy, and I'm pretty passionate about recovery. About November 13th, 87 to be exact, I took my last drink, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that tonight. I'm going to tell you a little bit about my story more tonight. I'm going to spend some time doing that. This will kind of give you a little kind of a preamble, what we're going to kind of go with it. Some of you guys that won't like this lecture this afternoon won't like this little talk, and you don't need to come back tonight. It's just that simple, because it's good shit, because it's going to be the same. You know, we're going to talk about the same kind of stuff. I'm a big book thumper, folks. This is my buddy. My buddy, yeah. I don't know how to explain it any other way than just like the way I usually do. I almost died getting this fellowship. I went to my first AA meeting about 1980, trying to salvage a marriage, and I didn't salvage the marriage, and I didn't get sober either. And I spent the next 7 years, remember my sobriety days, 87, I spent the next 7 years in and out of the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And one of the reasons sometimes that I'm introduced, I get to speak a lot, but I'm introduced as this controversial speaker is that because I don't make any bones about taking AA's inventory. I mean, I got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't get sober in a treatment center. I got sober in AA. But I almost died getting to this fellowship, I'm going to tell you. But it took me forever to finally land in a room full of people that were going to tell me the truth. Got a lot of people out there that want to lie to us, and I got to tell you, I do clerical work for a treatment center, and they're some of the biggest culprits out there. They have a tendency to want to candy coat this message until it's just so watered down that nobody can get well, and that's what I'm going to talk about today. And if some of you find that uncomfortable and it makes you cranky, then buddy, I'm no kidding. There's doors on both sides of this place, and just go smoke and have a nice life. I don't know what to tell you. I love alcoholics and addicts, and I'm so honored that I had some old-timers that talked to me clearly about the message in the book when I got back in 1987. Because if there had been one more nice little old lady pinch me on the cheek and tell me to keep coming back because everything was going to be okay, I'd have died. Because I'm the real McCoy, folks. Let's get something straight right off the bat before we go in this thing. And again, I'm going to watch my clock pretty close because I'm going to try not to keep you longer than an hour. A lot of times in treatment, we make a mistake by talking to the patients, and we got, let's say, a room full of patients, and we'll be talking to them, and just because they're in treatment, we'll be assuming that they're alcoholics and drug addicts. You follow me? And it's just like me sitting in this room right now. A lot of you guys have little tags on, and it says, you know, it's your name, and it says AA, you know, and we're assuming that you're an alcoholic. But I'm going to tell you something, folks. That's an assumption. That's an assumption. Because I don't know if you're an alcoholic or not. You can call yourself a chicken if you want to. It doesn't necessarily mean that you are one. Y'all follow me? Some of you guys walk around and cluck, make up a lot of dust, you know, acting like one. But the bottom line is, you're not one of us. You see, this is one of the places that treatment centers have killed us out there, is because once you come in and you write that big fat check, you follow me? Oh, well, you must really be an alcoholic. You're paying all this money. And we assume that you need to be in our hospital. We assume that you need to be in AA. And that's what I want to talk about a little bit. We got problems out there in the real world in our recovery community, folks. And everybody that's been around this fellowship longer than about 30 days can attest to that. And I'm walking an eggshell here because I don't want to piss anybody off. I hear people all the time, I don't care what they think. I do, you know, I mean, I've only got one eye left, and I mean, I don't want... I've been threatened and harassed and, you know, but one of the reasons is because, I mean, let's get clear on the format that what I'm using today. I'm going to talk about the stuff that's in the big book, and I'm going to talk to you a little bit. I'm going to try real hard not to cuss. I'll say that right off the bat, and I think I'll manage to get through this pretty well without doing it. I'm pretty passionate, so I'm going to raise my voice. I know sometimes I come off a little preachy, and I'm not intending to do that, but this is the format that I'm using here today. I'm going to lecture, I'm going to explain some things as I understood, and maybe y'all can take some of this information and go help somebody else get well. Y'all with me? We just got to hear Dick last night, and Marianne, and did just a great job. I've known who Marianne was, but I live in the same area that she does, but I've never heard her story, and I'm glad to finally get to, and I know Dick forever. I mean, that knucklehead is notorious in San Antonio, and it was an honor to get a chance to see. They're up at the podium sharing their story with you, and I'm not here to do that. Please, there's different ways to share, folks, and this is the way I'm going to share with you right now, and I'm not going to bore you with my story. My story is not very significant. I wish I had a good one like Dick, and I just don't. I'm pretty much of a garden variety drunk. You know, I didn't go to jail, didn't do a lot of crazy, stupid stuff, and nothing as exciting as Marianne. You know, I just nearly drank myself to death. And a few suicide attempts because the internal condition was killing me. And we got a fellowship 67 years ago that could guarantee us sobriety. Guarantee us sobriety. Let me run some stats by you. This is not scientific. We've been monitoring these statistics for years in Dallas and Houston. Intergroup sells chips, you know, the little tokens that we give away to the newcomer when they come into our fellowship. And these stats have fluctuated a few hundred over the years. We've been keeping them since 95. But this is basically the stats. 21,000 Desire chips. These are the stats out of Dallas last year. 21,296 Desire chips. We'll consider this ground zero. Use this as 100%. Okay? 21,000 pieces of aluminum. That's a lot of stupid Desire chips. You know, people walked up, picked up a Desire chip. Dig? Look at this. 1 month chips. This is how many they sold. 5,623. What? Man, we dropped off a little bit here, didn't we? In 30 days, how many did we lose here? Look at this. 1 year chip. By the time you pick up the piece of brass, the heavy metal. Dig? Look at this. 1,446. Guys, you don't have to do the math. I'll do it for you. It's about 6.8%. Less than 7% picked up a one-year chip. And from 95 up until this day, we've been monitoring these stats, and it's the same. Dallas Intergroup will furnish you these statistics. They print them in their little newsletters. Houston Intergroup will do the same thing. There's nothing new here. What am I trying to explain to you? What am I trying to show you? I'm trying to show you that the forward to our second edition says that 65 to 75% of the people were getting sober at our fellowship 67 years ago. When we first got this fellowship, guys, when the book was published in 1939, 1940, we had terrific success rate in AA today. We have nothing. There was areas historically, you can go back to the archives and look at this. I can give you the literature. Areas around the Midwest, around Akron and Cleveland, old Clarence Snyder, that reprobate, and Dr. Bob were working with the drunks, they had nearly 100% success rate. People would come in, they would qualify these cats, they would work them through the steps, they'd spit them out the other side, recovered alcoholics. Not always recovering. I get so sick of that I could puke. Nowhere in our book does it say you're going to always recover. If you're going to always be recovering, why don't you finish the steps and get the job done? And then you can recover and come help us help some other people. It's always recovering crap. It's this treatment center stuff. Again, it's treatment center stuff. Not knocking treatment centers. I'm going to say it again. I work for a treatment center. I do clerical work for a treatment center. They help a lot of people by detoxing them and by giving them some information that they could use when they get out. But my experience is when these cats leave treatment, if they don't get hooked up with fellowships like this, you people in this room, if they don't come and get a sponsor just like you, they don't stay sober. And my job at this hospital that I work at, high dollar buckaroo, I got to tell you, going in the door, we monitor the patients when they leave treatment to see how many are actually staying sober. Everybody that walks out, gets connected to a group, does the work with a sponsor, stays sober. That's my statistics. And everybody that doesn't. That's why I get so passionate about this. That's why I get up here and I jump around and I raise my voice. How can you take a clear message like this? You can recover from alcoholism, and I'll say this going in the door, from drug addiction too. And you can recover and never do it again. And I don't see how anybody can stand up on the podium and in a quiet little monotone voice just talk about the greatest gift that we've ever been given. The message, the reason that we can't get sober today is that there's too many people out there, one, that don't know the message, and two, that don't have the courage to share the message because they're too. You're gonna let me cuss once, aren't you? They're too damn chicken to stand for something. See? Because the truth of the matter is this. Guys, Alcoholics Anonymous was based on a thing called a spiritual experience. And there's a lot of people out there that don't want to talk about the spiritual experience. We don't want to talk about God because we don't want to offend anybody. I'd rather talk about your serotonin levels. Here's what I'd rather talk about. I'd rather talk about your triggers today. You see? And that's a very... I mean, come on, guys. I don't care if I'm talking in Canada or New York or wherever I'm talking. I speak at a lot of places. It's the same stuff. We start talking to real alcoholics about this, and we get some good laughter around this crap. I mean, the treatment center industry is a laughing joke. Because people continue to go to treatment and leave, go to treatment and leave, go to treatment and leave, go to treatment and leave. Why can't I stay sober? Scratch, scratch. Why can't I stay sober? Let me tell you why you can't stay sober. Let me tell you in a nutshell why you can't stay sober. You can't stay sober because we got a little deal on the little flyer. It says, it may be up here, into action. Because we won't get into action. Chris Raymer couldn't stay sober for 7 years because I wouldn't get into action. Y'all follow what I'm saying? In 1980 when I walked in the door. But I got to tell you something, folks. And there's people that always get in arms about this. Well, Chris, you probably just didn't want to do the work. Nobody told me what work to do. In 1980, when I walked into AA, they said, keep coming back. I'm sorry. 90 meetings in 90 days. Meeting makers make it. And I'm a poster boy for the fact that meeting makers don't make it. Meeting makers go slowly insane until the pain of staying sober outweighs the benefits, and then they either die or they get a drink. Am I knocking meetings? Of course not. Do I think they're important? Absolutely. But guys, the meetings don't keep us sober. God keeps us sober. How do we get connected to God? We work the steps. Real simple. The steps get us connected to this power. The power keeps us sober. The 10th step promises are fulfilled. We're placed in a position of neutrality. We don't want to drink and drug anymore. That's the absolute coolest thing in the world. It is not a self-help program. We've turned this thing about AA into some kind of a joke. It's a punchline at cocktail parties. Oh, you know, one day at a time. Excuse me? My book doesn't say anything about staying sober one day at a time. My book says I have a daily reprieve and I live life one day at a time. But you see, there's too many people out there that won't even read the book. They don't know what's in the 164 pages. Yeah, I'm passionate about it because I nearly died because I missed the message. Because nobody would slow me down, get in my face, and say, buddy, here's the bottom line. We're going to tell you what this is, and then you can decide if you want to do it or not. You follow me? We're just looking the other way as we die. Handing them another chip next month. Keep coming back. Everything's going to be okay. Unbelievable. Wonder what would have happened if Bill Wilson had done that to Dr. Bob. Dr. Bob, you just keep coming back. Keep trying. It'll work. One of these days, you'll get it. He didn't do that. He sat down in Dr. Bob's living room and explained to him what the disease of alcoholism was about. They stood there for hours comparing notes, understanding what this was about. And then Dr. Bob got sober and they did the same thing with, come on guys, Bill D. So here's what I'm going to do. Let me do this. Let me put these specs on. That's some crap, and that's some lousy deal, isn't it, man? I gotta wear a patch on one eye and specs on the other. I mean, this is nuts. I do need a monocle. It's been suggested, and I can't seem to find one. I don't think they make them anymore. Here, on page 155, if any of you got to get little books. Incidentally, before I forget, I've got a bunch of articles up here, a few literatures. I went out and we copied this morning, and you guys can pick this up after the meeting. I've got some little buttons up here, too. In fact, I've got a couple of buttons. I've got a little button called GSO Watch that some of us is a little chat room, a little information sharing about our fools up in New York trying to take care of our... kind of take care of our stuff. And we're watching them like a hawk, guys. We're paying attention to what they're doing out here. And I've also got some little buttons up here called Issue Man, and we're going to be talking about that if I get time to it, okay? So you guys can come pick up the little Issue Man button. If you wear one of these in and you know what it's about, guys, I can promise you, you're not going to be popular in your meetings when you go back. I'm going to tell you. You may save their life, but you're not going to be popular. Dig? And some of you, let's face it, some of you are more concerned with not being popular. And that's okay too, I guess. No, it's not. It's terrible. Okay. Here. Page 155, top of the page, Bill Wilson's talking. It's in a chapter called A Vision for You. How cool is that? Bill Wilson's talking about Dr. Bob, telling him what a debacle his life was and how much in trouble he was. He said, in the middle of that paragraph, first paragraph, he said, he had a desperate desire to stop but saw no way out, for he had earnestly tried many avenues of escape. Painfully aware of being somehow abnormal, the man did not fully realize what it meant to be alcoholic. You with me? He's talking about Dr. Bob. Dr. Bob wanted to stop. He needed to stop. His career was in jeopardy. His wife was fixing to... there was bad news on the horizon. This guy knew he was in trouble, but he couldn't stop. You with me? Because he didn't understand what it was to be alcoholic. And this is the crux of where our problem... This is why our success rates are so low. Because we won't slow down long enough and explain to the newcomer what it is to be an alcoholic. When I got to AA in 1980, when I walked through the doors, they qualified me. They qualified me like this. You having trouble with alcohol? Uh-huh. Well, you're probably one of us. Oh, geez, no kidding. Oh, okay. Well, that's great. I'll just keep coming back. That's great. And I'm sitting in these stupid meetings, and we're going to start the discussion. We're going to start the stupid war stories. That's what we're going to talk about tonight, in case anybody wants a preview. We're going to start these stupid war stories, right? And so the cats are going to go around telling the stories, and she's going to talk about, well, I've been divorced 6 times, and I've chopped up 3 people. And I'm going, and I've been 60 WIs, and I was arrested, and I was in a horrible 10-car pileup, and I'm, man, I can't relate to any of this, guys. You know, because I've never been in jail. I'm a professional chef in Houston, Texas. I'm knocking down some big whip, big. I'm living in a nice little apartment, and I'm looking around, and I says, I don't understand. I guess I'm not one of them. The tragedy was, of course I was one of you. But nobody would explain to me what it was to be an alcoholic. And I'm going to tell you something, guys. We do it with the kids. We're killing the young adults by the thousands out there because we're too busy trying to scare them into our recovery community with the stupid war stories. There's a place for war stories, and we'll talk about it tonight. One place. And if I had more time up here, we'd talk about that now. One place to tell the war story, and that's in a thing called a 12-step call. There's no place in a meeting for your stupid war stories. We got them here. Why do you need to tell them another war story? They walked in the door. What they're looking for is what it says on page 17, the common solution. Number one death rate in AA today is women. Why? Because we got too many people telling too many stupid war stories, giving them an excuse to leave. Why do we find out once and for all if you're suffering from the disease of alcoholism? Now, what a concept that is. That's what Bill did for Dr. Bob. He helped the cat see if he was one of us or not. You follow us? Yeah, I can see it right now. Some of you guys, I got buddies that are in the real estate business, and you're in the real estate business, and you got this million-dollar home listed, and some mullet drives up in an old busted-down Nissan like mine and says, I want to look at this house. What's the first thing this realtor is going to do? He's going to, guys, some of y'all in sale understand this, he's going to qualify the cat. He's going to find out, hey, idiot, you got any money? Because I'm not going to waste my time showing you this million-dollar house if you ain't even interested in buying it. You follow what I'm saying? Because I don't have time to mess with you. Guys, we are not here for your entertainment. We got people out there right now today dying because they can't get this message. Don't have time to sit here and babysit you. Let's find out. Alcoholics, addicts, let's find out. Are you one of us or not? Guys, why is it that so many of us continue to relapse? I'm a chronic relapser. I've done this a million times. I've picked up more desire chips than you guys. They used to call me on the phone. No kidding. Chris, we're down at the club. We're out of desire chips. Can you bring some of yours back so we can... I mean, how disheartening is this? But I mean, I'm picking them up. And I'm going to tell you, every time I picked one up, sometimes I was drunk when I picked them up. And sometimes I was sober. But every time I picked one up, I earnestly wanted to not drink again. The problem was I didn't have the power to pull that off. But nobody would slow down long enough to explain that to me. See? That's the problem we got. Turn to page 34 if you got your little books. Well, we're going to jump around a little bit here. This will be good. Middle paragraph. For those who are unable to drink moderately, the question is how to stop altogether. We're assuming, of course, that the reader desires to stop. I think that's a great question to ask a newcomer. Hey, Bubba, you want to quit? Because we ain't, because guys, some of us, I listen to us in meetings and I go to workshop and I listen. Some of it sounds like we're working on commission. We're out there trying to grab these guys that obviously don't want to stop. We're assuming that they want to quit. Let's qualify them. Let's find out if they do. Here's what it says. One line, and we never hear it in a meeting. Whether such a person can quit upon a non-spiritual basis depends upon the extent to which he has already lost the power to choose whether he's going to drink or not. One of the most powerful lines in the book, and we never hear it in a meeting. Can you quit on a non-spiritual basis? Oh, this is good. You felt the temperature of this room just rise up. All right. I'm going to fix and talk about some stuff. We're going to heat it up here just a little bit in the time I got left. Please, here's what I'm going to tell you right now. If this lecture makes you uncomfortable and you start questioning whether or not you're one of us, I've been successful. I want everybody in here. I don't care if you've been sober 15 years or 50 years. I don't care how long you've been sober. I don't care if you're brand new and you just went out to the truck and got you a stiff one to come in here and listen to this lecture. I'm going to ask you some questions, and I want you to answer them as honestly as you can get. Because, guys, bottom line is, only people that are going to get sober are the people that have the ability to be honest with themselves. So once and for all, you cats that continue to pick up chips like me and relapse over and over and over, you cats that continue to go back and forth to treatment over and over and over, let's start asking some point-blank questions. Because there's a difference, and we have to find out. Are you an alcoholic or an addict or not? See, there's a difference between alcoholism and alcohol abuse. Would y'all agree with that? Yeah. There's a difference between drug addiction and drug abuse. There's a lot of heavy drinking and drugging out there, guys. I mean, there's a lot of that stuff going on. But given sufficient reason, those cats can quit. Those cats can quit. Let's see if we did this right here today. There's about 15% of us, statistically, that are wired like me. I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict. We're wired like me. This is the three parts that the book spins gazillions of pages talking about. The first 60 pages, Bill Wilson spends talking about this right here. Let's find out if you're really one of us or not. From the doctor's opinion up to page 23, we talk about the physical piece. And from 23 to 43, we talk about the mental piece. And in there, interspersed on page 52 and several other pages, we talk about the thing that we broach the subject of in the doctor's opinion, the spiritual malady, the internal condition that we drink over to begin with. Okay? This is where issue man comes in. Because a lot of you cats that are in this room right now are convinced that you're drinking because of stuff that happened in your past. You're not. Alright. Alright. We're going to take this one at a time, and I'm, trust me, I'm watching the clock. We're going to watch this one at a time, and I'm going to ask you these questions, and we're going to have, I'll give you a little overview here. Physical allergy. Now listen, guys, 15% of us are gonna fit this category. And about 85% of the people out there won't fit this category. Do we have anybody in here that's not an alcoholic? Not an alcoholic? You're not an alcoholic? Judy, you're an alcoholic. You're not an alcoholic? Judy, are you? But you drink?
Oh, I drink.
Okay. Oh, this is good. I'm not sure if I like the tone of voice she used when she said that. Y'all should have seen it from this angle. Her little eyes light up. Oh, I drink. Well, let's find out. Let me play with you. I won't embarrass you much. I know, really. Physical allergy. Now, this is what the doctor's opinion up to page 23 talks about. When I put alcohol in my body, is there something physically that takes place in my body that makes it virtually impossible for me to control the stuff once I put it in my body? The doctor's opinion was crystal clear about this business, folks. He says the phenomenon of craving never takes place in people like Judy. The phenomenon of craving only takes place in people like Chris. Dig? Physically, you've got to be wired like this. This is the first piece of the disease. Physically, when I put alcohol in my body, I can't guarantee you every time how much I'm going to drink. I can control it at certain times. I was a functioning alcoholic for years. I was a professional chef. I drank socially, quote unquote, y'all follow me, for a long time before the stuff started piling up and I got in some trouble around this business. But early on in my drinking, guys, I could go days without drinking. You follow me? But when I would put it in my body, it's just like Dick was talking about last night. He got it all together for a period of time and he put the plug in the jug and he stopped. And he stayed stopped for a period of time and then he went and drank one beer. And that one beer triggered something inside him and made him... My first wife used to say, "Chris, you seem to get so thirsty." it's like, what are we doing here? It's got nothing to do with thirst, guys. I mean, but how many of y'all understand this phenomena? How many of you understand this thing about control? You started drinking, and you drank three beers and stopped. You went to happy hour, you drank a couple of beers and stopped. And then there was that day that you started to drink, and you drank three or four beers, and then you drank two cases. You dig, and you just kept drinking. And so understand that the phenomenon of craving at certain times can be satisfied with just a few drinks, and sometimes you can't satisfy it. And that's when I heard the term around that I used to hear it a lot. We drank ourselves sober. You just continue to drink and continue to drink and continue to drink. That's your body soaking this stuff up, buddy. And that's what everybody used to sit around and says, "God, look at that little skinny guy. Yeah, the little one-eyed guy. Look how much he's drinking." It's like, because I'd amaze you how much I could consume. You follow me? Until the disease progressed so far. And then it was like, "God, he's a sloppy drunk. You know, two drinks and he's out." You dig what I'm saying? But Judy and I, we'll go party later. We'll find out. Now, what's going to happen? Let's just pretend I'm going to have a couple of drinks and you're going to have a couple of... What happens after a couple of drinks, Judy? Oh, this is going to be so good. This is not going to be good. What happens after three drinks? No, honey, we got the rope out and it's getting tighter by the second. Come on with it. This is good. This is classic. This is good stuff. Could y'all hear what she was saying? She said she drank heavily for a long time. For several years, she drank heavily. But she got to a place where she could stop. See? And that's what the book is saying. If you can stop on a non-spiritual basis, if you can get to a place where you just, "Jesus, what am I doing? This is stupid," and just quit, then... But Judy, no, but this is just where your mind's going. Wasn't that a sufficient reason? Okay, but how many women do I know that got pregnant that never slowed down a lick? Or they slowed down for a few weeks and it went back? I'm saying that physically there's something. Most normal drinkers, when they start drinking a little bit, they get to a certain point and then it starts to become uncomfortable for them. About the time we're gaining control, they start losing control. And it becomes uncomfortable and they stop. But I've said this on 1,000 tapes. My little sister, she'll start drinking with me, and I'd say, "Lisa, you want another drink?" And she says, "No, thank you. I can't even hardly say it." She says, she's saying, "I'm starting to feel it." See, we're convinced that she's adopted, you know, because she's not the same gene pool. I said, I didn't ask you if you were starting to feel it. I said, "Do you want another?" "I'm starting to feel it too. It's good stuff. Do you want another drink or not?" "No, we have to go back to work." I have to go back to work too. Answer my question. You know what I'm saying? This is the hardest thing I think for normal people to understand. We're not like you. We do like family lectures. The family's there and the dad's there with a teenage son and he's eating the teenage son's butt. You know, he just, you know, "Be a man, suck it up." You know, but he didn't understand that the teenage son is reacting differently to the alcohol than he is. Genetically, we're different people. Does that make sense? How many left-handed people we got in here? I had a guy give me this example this week. He was a left-handed people. We had four out of this whole bunch, five out of this whole bunch. Let me ask you a question, little brother. Do you think being a left-handed had something to do with the way you were potty trained? Oh, please, God, let him give me the right answer. Do you think it had anything to do with that? No? Well, I've read studies that talk about potty training as a direct correlation to alcoholism. No kidding. No, no kidding. Guys, I'm going to tell you something. We've got an industry out there that wants to figure out why we're different, why we are, it's genetics. I got a twin brother that's an alcoholic just like me. I got a little sister that's not. I got a big sister that's not. You follow me? My mother right now, 5 o'clock tonight, will have a glass of wine. Every night, 5 o'clock, she has a glass of wine. Gallo, screw top, nothing but the best for my mom. Big. Pours her one glass. Has it, drinks it, gunk, 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 that's it, no big deal. I can't tell you how many times I've watched her pour that glass of wine at dinner time. We'll sit down and watch the news with her, and I'll say, "Lois," because I'm always, "What?" "Drink up." Bottle's full. I'm buying, no sweat there, baby, come on. She says, no thanks, it just tastes a bit off. We laugh about it. It's a bit off.
Yeah.
A bit off. So you're not going to drink it because it tastes a bit off. See, I... We laugh about this. I don't care if there's a dead roach floating in it. And it's very, very off. You know, I'm going to scoop the little guy down and flip him on over here like that and finish the wine. Because I'm not drinking because of the taste. And I'm not drinking because of the ambience. You know, you go to the bars and you get the drink and the bartender sets this big old stupid blue thing with all the umbrellas and the fruit and all that stuff. No alcoholic developed that drink. Y'all understand that? Because I don't care what it looks like. In fact, when you pitch forward into that thing, you could put your eyes out with that crap. I'm going to tell you. We don't know. Alcoholics developed shooters. You know, dig what I'm saying? We developed beer. Something that's easy, fast, goes down quick, comes back up without all the color. Yeah. No, because the crap stains your clothes. That's a fact. You don't want to. No alcoholic would drink that crap. Nobody would do that. That's unbelievable. Why? Why do alcoholics and addicts drink? Doctor's opinion says it. We drink for the effect produced by the chemical. Dick was talking about it last night. What's the effect? Ease and comfort, baby. Ease and comfort. Ease and comfort. That's why I drink it. And if it didn't make me feel better, ease and comfort, I wouldn't drink it. That's a fact. Second piece. Y'all got the physical piece. Y'all understand it. Can you control how much you're going to use every time? And that's what you have to ask the new girl. Well, sometimes it's a yes or no question. Every time, can you guarantee me how much you're going to drink? How many times did you come back off a bender and you had a dry spell in between and you says, I'm going to go and have one drink. You go to the cooler, open the cooler, reach in, go to the next cooler. There's a tall boy, but it's just one, right? Grab the tall boy, but you just got one. Follow me? The second time you went back, 30 minutes later, you got the six-pack. It's a physical phenomenon called craving that's kicked in with you. And if you can't relate, you're not one of us. Dig? Second piece, mental obsession. This is the piece that kills alcoholics and addicts because we're afraid to talk about it. Mental peace. Most controversial paragraph in the book is on page 24. If you want to empty an AA meeting, read this page as a topic. Up to page 23, we've been talking about the physical phenomenon of craving. And the book on page 23 says the main problem centers in his mind rather than his body. It would be academic and pointless. If you know you can't control it, just quit. Okay? Nancy Reagan, you yahoo. Dig? If you know it's causing you trouble, stop. Well, I can for short periods of time, and then I go back to it. And that's what the book is saying on page 24. The fact is that most alcoholics, italicized writing, y'all know Bill Wilson, when they wrote this book, they put this in italicized, they want you to see it. They've separated it from the rest of the paragraph so that you guys could get clear about what they're saying here. I'm going to tell you something, guys. There's a gazillion people in AA today, right now, that don't understand this paragraph. And that's why I'm telling you young adults, and I'm telling you new people that are in this fellowship, be careful what you're listening to in these meetings. And don't assume that everybody in that meeting understands this. Because it's an assumption it'll kill you. Here. For reasons yet obscure, we have lost the power of choice in drink. Boy, it doesn't get any clearer than that. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable, comma, at certain times, comma, not every time, at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory and suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We're without defense against the first drink. My book says, clearly, if you can choose to do it, you're not one of us. Come on, guys. We gotta get down to brass tacks here. Why would anybody, after a period of time, I mean, I know early on in the disease, you're not suffering from a lot of consequences, you know? Here. I have another graphic illustration I'd be glad to show you guys. Here's a little target. When we first started drinking, I'll never forget the first time I drank a bottle of Boone's Farm apple wine, and I was God for the day. Dig what I'm saying? This stuff worked for me. And I hit this little target dead center. And every time I went after that, I jockeyed around a little bit. Sometimes it took a quart of beer and a half a bottle of Boone's Farm and a cherry-flavored cigar to get me right here. Y'all follow what I'm saying? And sometimes there's a couple of martinis right here, a couple of beers. Everybody in this room that are an alcoholic, you knew exactly what it took to get you, here's the word, right. Y'all know that. Because we want to get right. I want to get right. The stuff works, and when it's working, I am good. You know what I'm saying? I make great decisions. Come on, guys. If it hadn't been for alcohol, I never would have got a job because I was too afraid to go ask one. And I'm going to tell you something. If it hadn't been for alcohol, I'd have been the only 49-year-old virgin in this place because I was too afraid to go ask for a date. I need... Patty's over there. You're not? Okay, no. I keep hitting this spot, guys. I keep hitting this spot, and that's a good thing. Now that a normal drinker can hit this spot every time. They know exactly what they need to take. We start feeling a little woozy, like Lisa. No, I'm starting to feel it. She knows that if she drinks any more, she's going to go past this mark, right, and end up out here. Right, Bonnie? I don't want to get out here. And this is when your family members, they don't understand. They think it's all about party. You just party too much. Guys, I'm trying to get right. I'm trying to get to this spot right here that makes me feel comfortable. You follow me? I don't want to get out here. We talk about this 1,000 times. Sometimes I can get nearly there. And sometimes, you know, it's like as the disease continues to progress, early on, I can get here every time just about. That's why we continue to drink. That's why it's so difficult to get the young adults to stop drinking. They're textbook alcoholic. By the time they're 18, we can diagnose them quite easily at 16. But they don't want to stop because 9 times out of 10, when they drink, they get to this spot. And then on the 10th time, they go out here and get in trouble, but they still haven't got it clear in their head. Guys, how many times did I get in trouble? How many times in 18 years of drinking and drugging did I end up way the heck off the page? And I'm coming back after that DWI, or I'm coming back out after that horrendous hangover. Here we do it at the hospital all the time. How many of you guys in here ever went to the bathroom? You've been partying, drinking, having a good time, you start feeling a little sick, you go to the bathroom, puke your guts out, last thing you see coming up is your toenails, right? You walk back into the same bar, wipe your mouth, and say something stupid like, "What? Must have been the chicken I had." Why are we doing this, guys? What's up with this? Huh? Given sufficient reason, you've just gotten sick. Your body is sloughing off alcohol so you don't die. Can you go back and leave it alone? No. We're going to go back and continue to go use. This is not normal, folks. And 85% of the people out there in the real world have never done this. Ever. And we do it like it's old hat. Like it's second. Here. Given sufficient reasons, what the book says, can you stop and stay stopped? There's a line on page 21. It says, given sufficient reason. Line on page 21, it says, the real alcoholic. It says, what about the real alcoholic? I introduce myself always as the real alcoholic. Because, buddy, I ain't your little disco drunk. I ain't your little drunk that came to this fellowship and women were pretty and the coffee was good and I just decided to stay because I got in a little trouble and everything was great. And there may be some of you in the room and you're welcome in the meeting. You're welcome. Stay in AA. Just please try not to talk to any newcomers. Can you stop given sufficient reason? I can stop every time. Guys, given sufficient reason, I can stop for a short period of time. New job, the book says. Ill health, how many of you stopped because of ill health? Falling in love, same thing. Getting pregnant, you stop for short periods of time. Changing an environment, warning from a doctor. If any of this becomes operative, this man or woman can stop or moderate. The book says, although he may need medical attention. Even hard drinkers may need to come to treatment. Get detoxed. Then do they go back and drink again? And if they do, buddy, you're it. Let's get to this next piece from the time I got. This is the piece absolutely guaranteed we won't talk about in the meetings because it's too controversial. You know why this is too controversial? The spiritual piece, the third piece of the disease, body, mind, and spirit. We're too big, afraid we're going to offend somebody because we're going to talk about this word right here. Y'all watch it. I'm not even going to say it because it'll offend people in the room. I'll draw it on the board. Ain't that a tragedy? I got to this fellowship in 1987, and I was in a group that I had not sobered up in. A buddy of mine had taken me over to this other group, and we were talking about the spiritual malady, and an old-timer came up after the meeting and asked me, please, 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 not to mention God in the meeting anymore, because it was scaring the newcomers off. And we wonder why our success rates are so low. Folks, I got sober because of a power called God, because of the power which is God, removed the obsession of me to use. There is no other message. Our fifth tradition up here says each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. That's the message. That's the message. You don't like the message? Go away. I don't care. sit here, walk on eggshells because you're afraid to talk about God and the meat screw you. You think Dr. Bob was afraid to talk about it? And Bill Wilson? You think the first 100 that finally grasped on this reed called sobriety, you think they were afraid to talk about it? But we know so much more now. We're so much more advanced now. We have antidepressants now, and everything's well. Everything's good. Here, let's chat. Perhaps a graphic illustration will explain what I'm talking about. Here. Here's an old buckaroo, this issue, man. These little buttons look a lot like this. Here's a little hand. It's an issue man, or issue woman. It could be either way. I've been accused of being gender biased, so we'll change that real quick. Issue man right here. We came up with this years ago to teach this so that everybody could see what this is about. For years in this fellowship, I'm going to talk about some of this tonight when I told you this talk, because for years in the fellowship, what I was doing, when I started coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm also doing therapy for 10 years, in and out, intensive therapy. Now, therapy is good stuff, and I learned a lot about myself, folks, but therapy won't fix what's wrong with me. Dick read it last night in the ABCs, that God could and would if he were sought. Didn't say the highest priced therapist in Houston, Texas, and I had him. Dig? I learned a lot about myself, and he believed that some of that stuff was what was causing me to drink. That stuff was not causing me to drink because I'm a real alcoholic, and what's causing me to drink is I got the disease. Make sense? God, you just can't go any further. No, 10 seconds, Holly, and I'll get you. Because you're dead wrong. I know exactly where you're going with it. This stuff right here can absolutely guaranteed exasperate the problem. Let me show you real quick. I'm going to go back and ask you the questions what they ask on page 21. Can you stop given sufficient reason? How many of you guys drank when you had a lot of money? Every hand. How many when you had no money? Same hand. No, come on. How many times have I sat in meetings and listened to somebody whine about not having any money? Oh, if I had the money, I could do that. This is just something else to talk about. How many when you were in a great relationship with somebody that you really love? How many when you was dating Satan's sister? Same hands. You know, it's the topic du jour in most of the meetings that I go to. Most of the people, everybody wants to talk about the stupid relationship they're in. Yes? Come on, guys. We do some great therapy around that, and we get past it. You dig? Let me tell you what the book says the spiritual malady is. The spiritual malady is described in the book as this. How many of you guys can understand irritable, restless, discontent? Doctor's opinion talks about that. How about prey to misery and depression on page 52? Trouble in personal relationships. Fear. Depression. There's a line that says we were unhappy. Can y'all relate to that? How about boredom? No sense of direction. You guys are... I've got three businesses starting, and I can't figure out which one to focus on. You know, I'm going 900 miles, right? Now, today, the catchphrase in treatment is we're ADD. Everybody's ADD. You know, it's like, oh, you're ADD. We'll give you another pill. That'll fix that. It's like, guys, the book, guys, 67 years ago when we got this textbook, it explains quite clearly. That's not ADD. That's the spiritual malady. And this is what's taking place. We got a bunch of people out here trying to medicate the symptoms of the disease. You follow me? Am I saying there's not a such thing as ADD? No. Am I saying that some of these therapeutic things need treating? Of course they do. Guys, if you're going through a bad divorce, or you lost a loved one, or you've got some issues out there that you need, you go find yourself a therapist. In fact, I'll stick my neck out real hard. If you're in this therapist, where the heck are we? If you're out here in this fellowship right now, and you're in Alcoholics Anonymous right now, and you're not seeing a good therapist, shame on you. Because a bunch of you guys could get well a lot quicker if you weren't dealing with all of this stuff out here. What you're doing is, instead of seeing a therapist, you're coming into the meeting and wanting to talk about it. And that, dear friends, is the topic of conversation tonight. I'm not going to go there today. Dig? Because that's not what AA is about. AA is about carrying this message of hope. So here's what happens. All that internal condition's going off in your system, right? The depression and the fear. And I take a drink or a drug, and this goes away. And it treats that internal condition. Guys, everybody wants to jam alcohol. They've always wanted to, Chris, we want you to talk to the high school, and we want you to tell those high school kids to just say no to drugs. I said, I won't do it. Because there's nothing wrong with alcohol. There's nothing wrong with drugs. Guys, if it hadn't been for those chemicals, I'd have been dead. I needed something to treat this internal condition. You can't live in this condition. Guys, when I found alcohol, I mean, I finally grew up. I finally started feeling great about myself. And when I was finally doing some drugs, I mean, I added on later on, it all worked. And then the stuff stopped working, and now what am I going to do? You follow what we're saying? It's nuts. It's absolutely nuts. And this is what happens. This internal condition's got to get treated, and that's what Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob understood. That's what they started telling the newcomer about. They started talking about this spiritual malady having to be treated in order for us to straighten out. So how do you straighten out this thing called a spiritual malady? You work the steps. This stupid idea that we do in our meetings all the time, or do in treatment, to believe that if I get all my little ducks in a row, guys, there were times that I didn't have, this book is full of three stories that talk about it on from 23 to 43 that explain guys that had perfect lives. Fred's the greatest line in the book. It says on page, I think, 37, it talks about Fred's story. It says, it was the end of a perfect day, not a cloud on the horizon. I got a t-shirt in the room that says it. End of a perfect day, not a cloud on the horizon. He walks across the threshold of a dining room. The insane idea of taking a drink hits him. He has a cocktail, physical allergy kicks in, and he's off to the stupid races again. We're dealing with insanity here, folks, not denial, insanity. End of a perfect day, not a cloud on the horizon. End of a perfect day. How can you get any better than that? Well, that was the problem. It was too perfect for him. I've heard it. And now what we want to do is we want to go through our life walking this, straddling this line. I want to be happy, but not too happy. You know, I want to be successful, but not too successful, you know, because I want to stay humble. What does humility mean? That you got to be poor? That you got to be by yourself? That you got to be lonely? No, a bunch of you people believe that it's wrong to come into a meeting and laugh. It's wrong to come to a meeting and sing it from the mountaintop. My book says I'm supposed to bear witness to God's power, but we don't want to do that in a meeting because we don't want to upset the newcomer. Why in the world are we walking on eggshells around this crap? This book is absolutely crystal clear what we're supposed to be talking about. Recover. Recover. And you'll have a different way of life. Dick said it last night, and I'm going to tell you, I heard it from a podium one time, and it offended me, and I've said it ever since, because the truth of the matter is this. If you're in this program, and you're not happy, joyous, and free, there's a reason. I'm not saying, guys, that we don't have days when we just feel a little off. I'm saying, point blank, if you're not getting the promises that the book talks about, there's a reason. And the reason is, you didn't get into action and finish the work. And you didn't do what you were supposed to do, or you would be to a different place. And some of you, point blank, don't want to get there. Now, let's just get straight there right now. Everybody of you in this room know people in your groups right now that don't want to do this. They got the opportunity to do the work, but they're not going to do the work because they want to sit on their butt and feel sorry for themselves. Guys, what's the payoff? There's a payoff for being a victim. Attention. There's a payoff. If I can remain a prisoner to these external circumstances, then I don't have to participate in life. I don't have to be responsible to a girlfriend. I don't have to be responsible to my employers. Because anytime you get too close, all I got to do is throw that trump card down and say, well, after all, I'm a sick alcoholic. And in today's society, in our AA meetings around the country, again, guys, I travel around a lot of places, and it's the same in Texas, it's the same in New York, it's the same in Canada, any place I speak, out in Phoenix, a couple of weeks from now I'll be talking, and there's a group of people that hate my guts, because from the podium, I'm saying point blank what should have been said for years. Stop being a victim. God did not put us on this earth to be a victim. Here's the problem. The problem is that we don't have enough people to carry that message. We're supposed to get this guy right here. Mikey comes to us, and first thing we do when he gets here, I don't care if he's still shaking from the detox, dig? First thing we do is we qualify him. We go back to this, and we start asking him about the physical allergy and the mental obsession. See if he can identify with these symptoms right here. See if he can identify with the spiritual malady, this internal condition, and then ask him if he wants to get well. Ask him if he's willing to do the things necessary to work the steps. Because I need to tell you, folks, we're going to hit it harder tonight. We need Mikey in the trenches. And we need every person in this room in the trenches. And we don't have time to deal with you and your little foibles. We don't have time to sit here and babysit you. We need some help in the trenches because we're losing the battle. You think alcoholics and drug addicts are going to be treated in treatment. They're not being treated in treatment. They're being sobered up. They're being dried out in treatment. And then they're cranking back into our meetings, and our formats of our meetings have gotten so disgustingly diluted because of everybody trying to be politically correct that we won't talk about the solution. And shame on everybody in this room that sat there in a meeting and listened to it and didn't stand for something. And that includes me. And that includes me. Because I did it for years. God's grace is infinite. And it's even. And everybody that does the work is going to get the same results. My results may be different than Buffy's results, but it will be significant enough to change her at a cellular level. It'll be significant enough to have the book, the way it talks about it, huge emotional upheavals, displacements, everything in our lives, the ideas are rearranged. And I come in here as an absolute hater of everybody, including myself. Dick both and Marianne both talked about this low self-esteem stuff, this hating ourselves and feeling like we're worthless. We are, guys. That's how we get here. We know we're not living up to our expectations and not being the kind of people that God wanted us to be. But they've given us a solution on how to get past that. But the problem is the solution takes some effort. The Bible talks about it. The Jewish faith talks about it. Eastern religion talks about it. The Muslims talk about it. You've got to have a thing called responsibility in order to get well. Alcoholics Anonymous is not therapy. 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 I don't know how I can say it any different. Alcoholics Anonymous is not therapy. Alcoholics Anonymous is a spiritual program of action. Spiritual program of action. It is not sitting on your butt talking. It's a spiritual program of action. Moving into action. There's a whole chapter called Into Action. You can't get well until you get into action and work the steps. 7 years I can't get sober in the fellowship. I'm telling the therapist, I keep going to those stupid meetings. They don't work. Chris, are you working the steps? Well, no, but they don't work. We've laughed about it 1,000 times, so I never said, you want to go out with somebody? Well, yeah. Well, did you ask her? Well, she won't go out with me anyway. Well, why don't you just ask her? No, never mind. Well, then shut the fuck up. No, what are we doing here? You say that the program won't work, but you've never finished your amends. You've never done a fourth step. Guys, Bill Wilson, we talked about it last night. Bill Wilson was in his ninth day, second week in detox when he had his barn-burning spiritual experience. Dr. Bob, a little less than 2 weeks, finished the steps. Bill D., 2 weeks. Nobody in the early days of Alcoholics Anonymous took longer than a month or so to work the steps. Nobody. And what do we got today? I got a room full of people, well, some of you looking quite uncomfortable, are in various stages of not doing the work. You follow me? The cats will leave our treatment center. We got some treatment center buddies in here, and I'm calling them 6 months down the road and talking to them and see they're having trouble. Chris, I'm just coming apart. Where's the fourth step? What fourth step? The fourth step that you had completed when you left treatment, where is it? Well, it's in my closet. Excuse me? Speak up? It's in my closet. No, I can't hear you. It's in my closet. Well, I see. We gave you those specific instructions, didn't you? Write the fourth step and then go put it in your closet so nobody will see it. I believe the instructions we gave you was to dump it in the fifth step and turn around the next day and go finish your stupid amends. And oh, by the way, while you're at it, go start working with somebody else now. Yeah, that was the instruction. That was the instruction. And I got to tell you, in defense of some of them, they're walking back into AA and they're hearing that stuff. Oh, my sponsor wanted me to wait on that fourth step for a while. Why would anybody want somebody to sit on all of that stuff? What's the truth? The truth is this. The sponsor doesn't have time to mess with you. So it's time to go find another sponsor. Take your time to work this day. Patty and I were laughing about it right before I went to New York this last time to see her. And I did a little talk up north. There was a guy from New Jersey in my AA group. And I was going to go talk to him. He says, I'm fixing to go to New Jersey. And the first thing out of his mouth, he says, well, you know, my sponsor, he explained to me that we're going to be working these steps the rest of our lives. And, well, after all, this is not an overnight thing. I mean, I didn't get this sick overnight. I'm certainly not going to get well overnight. He's got me working one step a year. Guys, everybody, I'm losing my patch. Everybody got quiet. Everybody got quiet, and then every head in the place turned around and looked at me, and it was like, and I didn't have to say anything because I had a little alumni that was sitting in that room, And that little guy, he'd been sober about 8 months, 9 months, had finished all of his amends, was actively out there working in the meetings, 12-stepping people, 8 months sober. And he ate that guy's butt. But the guy had 5 years of sobriety. Now, come on, guys. You stuck with me this far. Stick with this one little piece. The man had 5 years of sobriety. And I'm not going to question whether he was sober or not. My question is this. Was he even one of us? Because my book says if you can stay sober on a non-spiritual basis, if you can sit on your butt for 5 years before you finish the work, then you're not one of us. Then you were given sufficient reason to quit, and you quit. Hallelujah. That's great. But you know the little newcomer whose life depends on finishing this work and having his own spiritual experience is going to listen to your of stupid opinion about taking your time to work the steps and to work one step a year. And I got to tell you point blank, you just participated in his death. I listen to people all the time that want to talk to me about how they could say anything in a meeting. You can share anything you want in an AA meeting. Unless you've got a little guy with one eye in there, and then I hope that you don't do that. Who in the hell do we think we are? I'm including myself in that category. Who do I think I am that I can walk into an AA meeting and share anything I want? When you've been given the absolute key to the kingdom right here. Millions of us sober today because of this message. I got one job. Is to carry this message of hope to the newcomer. I don't give a rat's butt about your relationships. I don't care nothing about your finances. I don't give a rat's you know what about what you do or your legal problems. I got one job, to make sure you understand the necessity of a spiritual experience. And if I can help you see that, I have participated in your recovery, and you're going to be with me the rest of your life. And we need our brothers and sisters in this fellowship. But to sit in a stupid meeting and talk about anything else but this is absolutely ludicrous. We got people leaving the fellowship by the millions. I had two calls last week calling me, wanting me to talk about the underground meetings. One was an old-timer with 30 years of sobriety that was so sick and tired of being in AA he could puke because every time he walked in, he listened to some couch-broke you-know-what wanting to share about his day-to-day. I just need to talk about my day a bit. Screw you. Screw you. You talk about it before out here smoking a cigarette. You come to my house after the meeting. We'll go to Denny's and order a Grand Slam, and you can tell me all you want about your... But right now, in this meeting, we're going to talk about the 164 pages of absolute pure truth. And I'm going to share some experience with you about my spiritual experience and how I got taken to a different place with God and how all that hate I harbored for years left. I'm going to talk to you about how the obsession to use left me in a twinkling of an eye 14 years ago and has never returned. And that's the hope I'm going to share with you. And maybe you'll want it, and maybe you won't. But you won't walk out of that room still not knowing the truth. Did I mention that AA is not therapy? I think I did. Let me get clear real quick, and I'll get you 5 minutes. I'll let you out. This little thing right here that we talked about, folks, is quite controversial. This little piece right here about the issue, man, sometimes is taken as a brunt of a joke. I'm not now or ever am I making fun of your issues. Please, from the podium, I need to make sure we're all clear here. Every one of you in this room has been through some traumatic things. These things need to be dealt with. But my book is quite clear. If the only reason you're drinking is because of this issue, let's deal with it, dig, get past it, and then go away. Do what you need to do in this life. Because the real alcoholic, the person suffering from the disease, must have the spiritual experience. Period. And that's the message that we need to be sharing. If you need a doctor for your depression, you've worked the steps, the depression's still with you, by all means, please see a doctor. Please, avail yourself of this. I'm not one of these that stand on the podium and say that don't take the antidepressants. There's a lot of us in this room right now that are alive because of those stupid antidepressants. I'm with you. I took them for years. The good news is that once I finished working the steps, my depression left and I could get off the damn things. They're quite expensive and they're bloated with side effects. And some of you cats are sober, but you're still taking handfuls of pills. I need to ask you to start questioning that just a bit. With me? I'm not saying don't do it. Do it. I don't want anybody to leave here misunderstanding what I'm saying. Am I saying your external stuff's not important? Never. Your external stuff is quite important. What I'm saying is, that ain't what alcoholism is. My little brother back there that was left-handed, he's not left-handed because of anything external. He's left-handed because that's the way he was born. And this is what we have to treat. You cats that are allergic to eggs, it had nothing to do with mom and dad. It had to do with the fact the way you were born. Let's deal with that and go on down the road. Why do we have to make this so complicated? Why do we have to clutter it up with everything else? As an alcoholic, I'm suffering from a spiritual disease that needs treating. You with me? I also had some medical problems that I needed to deal with. I also had some therapeutic problems I needed to deal with. I also needed to get off my lazy butt and go to the gym and start exercising, because our bodies are made to move, not to sit. Dig? I had to do certain things so I could be treated. For me, I also had to spend some time back in the church and reconnect some roots over here. It's a great big world out there, guys, and I get to do a lot of cool things out there. You follow me? I don't have to be tunneled in and think that AA is going to be the answer to everything. It's not. It was never intended to be. AA was intended to do one thing: treat alcoholism. Make sense? I look forward to seeing some of y'all tonight. See you soon.